It's not every year the madness actually lives up to the hype, but 2023 will go down in the books for a very interesting road to the Sweet 16. By the time you listen to this edition of the Sports Cubicle with the Marvelous One, Dan Marver, Devin Tingle, Paul Shavari, and myself, Mike Mercado, the Sweet 16 will be locked and loaded, ready to go next week in this March Madness tournament. For the men's side of the bracket, the women's side doing their thing as well. We're going to concentrate on the men's side right now because, Marvelous, there's been a lot of interesting matchups, some crazy upsets, and some local flair into this tournament. The Illini don't make it out of day one. The Northwestern Wildcats put up a fight against UCLA, find a way to get out of week one, out of day one, but can't keep the tournament run going. Your thoughts on what has been always the fun first 2 days on Thursday and Friday, and then the very compelling Saturday and Sunday. Your thoughts on the 2023 men's college basketball March Madness tournament so far?
Well, I've always said, because, and I'm reluctant to do brackets myself, because on a given day, you know, and a one and done in a single game, unusual things can happen for a team that gets hot, or they have a matchup that's favorable, or somebody gets injured or whatever. And, of course, this year you had your Princetons, your Furmans, your Fairleigh Dickinsons, which was the biggest one of all, the second time in history that a 16 beat a 1. Mm-hmm. Right, you know, if chalk holds out, you got two ones left, Alabama and Houston. They're in the Sweet 16, and they're on opposite sides. So chalk would say Alabama's playing Houston, which would be really helpful for Houston since it would be in their home city. But as we speak, it looks like in the South you've got Alabama and San Diego State. And, of course, the Cinderellas, Princeton, is in there too. And the East is kind of wide open. I mean, it looks like, Tennessee's in there, but there's still, as we speak, some decisions to be made with regard to that bracket. Michigan State and Marquette is an intriguing game today that will have been played before we air. But the winner of that game goes into the East. So that could be a team that might get a little bit further, because I don't see the Fairleigh Dickinson, Florida and Atlantic winner going very far. And no offense to them, they would play Tennessee next, so that looks pretty good. And then in the Midwest, we've like I say, we've got Houston and Texas both there, which would be an interesting matchup.
Yeah.
And then in the West, we have Arkansas, UCLA, and possibly Gonzaga. They have the late game, even after that final won't be known even before our show's over. But Gonzaga's playing TCU at 8:40, so that will not be totally known. But that Sweet 16, it will be a little bit different than usual. You'll have, like I say, either Fairleigh Dickinson or Florida Atlantic will be in it, and Princeton, neither one of those would have been expected, and that's a given. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, the Blue Bloods, Kansas, Duke went down, and so, you know, North Carolina chose not to participate in the NIT, so there's going to be a little different flavor to the Final Four. There's not going to be anybody repeating from last year, basically, and there'll be a lot of new names. I mean, that you haven't seen in the Final Four in recent years. So that will be nice for those schools. And, you know, and there'll be good ratings for CBS and TNT. So on it goes. As we were just speaking, the first 2 days are great because there's four different games simultaneously. And it's almost a bummer when we get down to where there's just one game at a time, like now. There'll be two games at a time, at least, Thursday and Friday. But after that, it's just pretty much one. But it's pretty exciting going from channel to channel. I like that, and so do you, I can tell. So it was too bad about Northwestern. They made a great comeback. They lost 68-63 to UCLA. They were down by 10 at the half and made a good run. And that might be their best team for a while, because Adige and Bowie are both gone. And that was the engine that really drove them this year. And it was not expected they do very well. They had a real issue about bigs. And this guy Nicholson got 17 points last night, who's their big, because they lost Nance and Young to Duke and North Carolina, neither of whom went any further than Northwestern, oddly. But, you know, things are looking up for Northwestern. I mean, they finished second in the Big Ten. I think the Big Ten was not as strong as usual. Purdue, I mean, I don't even know how it's possible for a 7-4 guy to not advance any further than they did. But Edie is, quite difficult to guard, but somehow or another they got beat. So credits to Fairleigh Dickinson on that, because that's very unusual that happens. And as a 16-1, I think the other one was UMBC over Virginia years ago. And you almost think it's never going to happen because it's usually a team that's from a non-major who may have been in a play-in game and whatnot. And maybe the play-in game is good for them because they play, they talk about that even in the pro sports where a team that's been resting may not have an advantage over a team that's played a game and has some momentum. And I like the bracketing this year. I mean, like I said, I didn't pick a bracket and I would have lost. I would have probably had Duke and Kansas and all the blue blood. So, and Purdue. I thought Purdue would be very difficult with the 7-4 guy, but that's not what happened. So, and like I say, in a given 2-hour period with the 19 to 20, 21-year-olds, and now we have 25-year-olds because of the because of the Wild West, as I call it, with the blue, where they get the extra year for COVID and they get to move without having to wait a year. I mean, they're seriously, I mean, DePaul, I think their average age was 23 this year of their starting lineup. So, they're all gone. Not that that will help them because they were pretty bad, but so, I mean, that's the way it is. It used to be you'd have, a player you'd get familiar with. And now if you get familiar with a good player, he's probably going to leave early for either another team or for even the NBA. So it's a whole different thing, even with the NIL. It's changed a lot, the college game in the last few years, but the tournament's still interesting. And sometimes the name on the back might confuse you and that you might think they're better than they are because they're blue bloods. But this year it's the blue bloods have not been as good as usual. We still have, like I say, as we speak, we still have Michigan State and Indiana from the Big Ten. And the Big East has a whole bunch of teams that play, today, even before we come on the air, Xavier, Marquette, UConn. And there's some local flavors still out there, but, which is good for the Midwest and such. But, there's a lot of new teams and we'll see what happens. It's going to be great. There's going to be the Sweet 16 coming up on the, 23rd and 24th, Thursday, Friday. And that's always exciting for the nation to zoom in on that, and then we'll get down to the final four a week from today.
There's so much to unpack, and this is why I was so excited for this time of year to get Marvelous on here, because you get to cover this on so many different angles, and there's so many things I want to break down from both a local aspect of how U of I and Northwestern handled this tournament run. But I kind of want to hit back on what you talked about, the Thursday-Friday elements of the first 2 days of the tournament. If you're fortunate and lucky enough like I was, where you went to an affluent enough high school, it was part of your March, Thursday and Friday in your lunchrooms and through passing periods and whatnot, because they wanted to showcase some of these great colleges, especially here in the Midwest through the Big Ten. A lot of people from my high school go to Michigan, Wisconsin, Marquette, DePaul, a bunch of these different local schools, a bunch of teams that end up in the tournaments. And I think it's so much fun nowadays where you could be at work and everybody accepts that Thursday and Friday, a little less productivity. You're able to put it on the television and do it on because it's a fun experience. And if you are able to be fortunate enough to go to college or have somebody who did go to college or your children or your nieces and nephews or your mom and whoever, you're able to invest in it. Kind of like you're able to invest in the Olympics, the World Baseball Classic, the FIFA World Cup, whatever it is, right? Anytime you're able to carry a flag and pom-poms for somebody that has more of an emotional attachment, I think it's really fun. And I think the upsets are great. What's interesting about the March Madness tournament to me is you need a little bit of both. Unlike other sports where you really want the underdog and you're all in on it, and some where you want the dominant blue bloods, the top-tier franchises, I think in college, men's basketball specifically, you want a mixture of both. You want the underdogs to win a bunch of games the first weekend of the tournament. And then you want a bunch of the blue bloods to win a bunch of games later on in the tournament. You need a mixture of both. Every once in a while, it's good to get some of these George Masons and Loyolas and whatnot to the Final Fours, to the Sweet 16s, to these big stages. But you also want to have the big moments. That's why I put Duke and Houston as my national championship game, because it kind of felt like one of these years where there were going to be a lot of upsets. I don't put money on the Big Ten anymore in these tournaments because it's just so athletic around the entire country.
Yeah.
But you can kind of just feel that the idea of like a senior heavy team with big point guards, experienced point guards, isn't the default anymore. You can't just say that this is going to be the way a tournament shakes down. And I think that's what's been a very intriguing part of it. Now, Marvelous, let's kind of stay local. Your overall thoughts on what we saw from Collins over in Northwestern's and Underwood over in U of I, how would you grade out? Obviously, U of I, it's been a tough 2 years in the tournament. And then Northwestern kind of solidifying themselves as this was a nice team. Go Cats, as Fitz would say. Like, it was okay. It wasn't anything magical. We won't have a Sister Jean moment, but, you know, a pretty good campaign, everything nonetheless, everything being equal. So how do you grade out the local teams?
Well, in terms of Illinois, it's proven that they got beat by a pretty good team, because Arkansas then yesterday defeated Kansas 72-71. Mm-hmm. So I thought Illinois wasn't one of their best teams. I mean, they lost a lot in the last few years between the Zumno and the big guy. So they didn't seem as strong, but they did. I mean, there were a couple of games where at Illinois, they came back from like 18 down to beat Northwestern towards the end of the year. So there were some games where they really shined, but I didn't see them as an Elite Eight team or anything of that nature because of the bracketing. I mean, they were either going to face Arkansas, or, you know, after Arkansas, they were going to face Kansas. So that would have been tough for them. That would have been a tough matchup. So I think that in terms of Illinois, I think that they did about as well as they could. Northwestern did far better than expected on their end. And like I was mentioning, they didn't expect much because of the front court being decimated, but those guards were outstanding. And UCLA, and any other team that played them, the key was to try to hold down, the guard play. Bowie became quite a sensation throughout his career. He looks like he's maybe pro ready to me. And, they were lucky to get the transfer, so they got the other guard too. So that was very helpful for them. But all in all, I mean, you talk about watching the games when you're in school. I mean, Grandpa Marver, I would watch World Series games during the day when I was in school and watch the Apollo liftoffs. So, but I like the fact that Grandpa Marver can now follow the NCAA at his office desk with modern technology.
That's what makes it so fun, right? Like the being able to, in the middle of the day, text each other, like texting the group, like, right, hey, this is what's happening during this game. Or if you have a buddy that went to Michigan State, or a buddy that went to Marquette, or your wife went to, you know, like, and in my case, if DePaul or UIC ever decide to do something, you can text my wife, like, hey, look, they're in this round. Like, there's just something about the communal effect of the March Madness tournament. And, you know, shout out to the women's tournament too. I know we're not going to break down a lot of it, but it's, you know, you're so very passionate about girls basketball and how much has grown in this country around the world. And they do a great job of marketing it. And, you know, obviously what's going on over at Iowa, it's absolutely crazy, both transcending for men and women's sports. So I think there's just there's something about the joy of watching college students, the joy of watching your school, your alma mater, and also the region. And I want to bring this up, Marver, here on the Sports Cubicle as we break down March Madness 2023. It's the Marvelous One, Dan Marver, Devin Tingle, Paul Shavari, and myself, Mike Mercado. I want to break down what upsets me the most every tournament, every year, ever past we'll give Loyola, the Loyola year, a break. Ever since the U of I run that you and I were talking about off air, one of the greatest runs in tournament history that ended up in a great matchup between UNC and U of I. And I've always talked about this. U of I can't get to the level, can't talk about themselves being an institute when it comes to men's college basketball until they win a national championship. They're a great school. They can't speak on themselves like they're Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, anyone, UCLA, because they haven't been able to win the big one. One day they will, and then that would solidify themselves as one of those tier teams, because they are the top of the tier of teams that have never won a national championship when it comes to men's college basketball. But one of the most frustrating things is the talent pool that you watch, that you scout yourself, both on the women's and men's side, that we don't recruit in this state, that don't stay here. Think about the amazing institutes, colleges, university from Chicago University all the way to U of I, everything in between, every school in between, whether you want to be a Normal to Bradley to Evanston to Macomb to Decatur, it doesn't matter. You know, you want to go all the way and be a Saluki, you can do it. There is no reason this state doesn't have dominant regional basketball teams, and that upsets me the most every year. It upsets me that you don't get to see DePaul like you did in the glory days. It sets me that in the league that UIC is, that they can't compete on a certain level.
Yeah.
You know, look at some of the junior colleges here. There's plenty of talent, that would be more than happy to play for some of these schools here. Marver, you're somebody who's actually connected. It's right here in you. It's in this, in the sangre, the blood of your family. Why can't this state schools really, really, I'm talking about truly, you know, recruit the homegrown talent?
Well, it's amazing to me. There, I mean, at DePaul, there was a fellow by the name of Tiger Campbell who was sitting in the row in front of me for almost a year. He's now a fifth year or a fourth year player at UCLA. So he was kind of local. I think he's from the area. He played over at the prep school in Indiana, and he went to UCLA. But maybe it's because they take the trip. They're, 17 years old, and they see the beaches and the palm trees and and the pretty girls, and, you know, and it's, then they come back here and they see Chicago.
20 degrees, the snow, the ice on the ground.
And the murders. And so, I mean, I don't know. UIC made a move from the Horizon League to the Missouri Valley Conference and was a bottom feeder. And Loyola moved from Missouri Valley to the Atlantic 10 and became a bottom feeder. So I don't know what to say about that, because the two, I mean, Loyola was a pretty good team when they had the talent they had, you know, for the year they did do well. And one good thing that happens, though, for these teams, even you talk about last year, St. Peter's, their coach goes to Seton Hall. It's very good for the coaches. Porter Moser goes to Oklahoma.
Right.
The guy at George Mason is now Miami, Florida.
So
and
true.
And Shaka Smart from VCU, he's at Marquette. So it makes for an opportunity to make a big move when they are seen on the national stage. So that's good for the coaches. The players, I mean, now they're technically getting some reward with NIL, but, you know, should they be paid? You know, so that's been a question too. And about, you know, the players, because they're getting a free education. So, but I don't even understand how the graduate thing works. They go to from one school to another and they have to be taking classes. What are they taking? Phys ed or something? I mean,
we've talked about this for so long, because I think there is a true, there became a true division of student athlete and just paid for athlete. And I, you know, you and I talk about it all the time, like, it depends on how you want to see this. I think when we bring up all the Porters and everything that happened with Shaka and whatnot, like, yeah, they did it on the backs. They did hard work. They had to recruit, but they did it on the back of these young athletes. And the idea that now that there's a little bit more transparency between, all right, if this coach is going to leave, cool, I'm going to go to DePaul. I'm going to go to, you know, Marquette. I'm going to go here and I'm going to play 2 years. What do you mean? Like, I'm going to, and then I'm going to go to Europe and play. Like, I think as long as we're all being honest about it, I mean, here's the end of it, right? No, man, we talked about transfer portals, right? We talked about NIL. And yet nobody's talking about it right now, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of March Madness, because at the end of the day, the only thing that matters, like the song says, when the ball is tipped, it doesn't matter, you know, like that's it. Once the ball is tipped, all of it goes out the window. So I think all in all, it's been a pretty fun first few days, and it's going to be a very fun second week of the tournament. And I know this is some of your favorite time of the year. Sure. You can smell the baseball gloves and the baseballs and the bats and the pine tar. But while you're doing that, you're enjoying the squeaking of the hardwood floor. And I know, Marver, you're just getting all excited, ready to go. But we still got some weeks left of this tournament.
And I was going to mention, you know, you talk about recruiting. Glenn Bird West was the state champion in the big schools last year, and their best player went to Gonzaga. And this year was Moline. Their two best players are going to Iowa, even though Moline is in Chicago, but it's Illinois. So this just gives you an example of the top talent. I mean, there's a lot of talent even in the North Shore, and a lot of the kids go to Ivy League schools, like Jake Fegan going to Cornell, for example. So, but Nick Martinelli is doing a good job at Northwestern. He wasn't supposed to play, but he's now coming off the bench. He was from Glenbrook South's fine team of last year. So once in a while, a kid gets their name in the box score at big schools from the area, but not very often. It's a shame. I mean, even going back, you talk about the, you know, Guire Cummings years and, you know, all that going back into the archives of the late 70s and 80s. And DePaul, it was that little tiny school under the L tracks with the gap tooth, Grandpa Ray Meyer. And Those days are long gone.
And we'll
But
see if we
that
ever
was
get
fun. I
back
mean,
to it.
I was just pulling up a video, 1980 at Rosemont in December. It was number one, DePaul versus number three, UCLA. And it was the first time UCLA had ever played DePaul in Chicago, obviously, because
Unbelievable.
they weren't going to play him in the little gym on campus. So I enjoy watching the video. A young Bob Costas did that game. Quite amazing.
Think about that. Anybody listen to this? At one moment in time, your DePaul Blue Demons were ranked ahead of the UCLA Bruins, and Bob Costas was calling the game.
NBC, yeah.
I mean, things have changed, my friend. How things have changed. Let's see if one day we get back to those glory days. We'll just see. We saw how this city, this state, will get behind a winner. You know, whether they support them during the Big Ten tournament and anything before that. But come March, give them a winner, they'll celebrate it. But we want to know your thoughts. Let us know. Have you enjoyed this March Madness? How busted is your bracket? Obviously, they've already announced there are no perfect brackets anymore. So who knows who's going to win this year's matchup? Who knows if it is just going to end up being Houston? If it ends up being Alabama at the end of it all, it ends up just being a one seed after all this craziness. But we want to know your thoughts. Let us know. We're on Twitter at SportsKeepItGoTV. For the marvelous one, Dan Marver, for Devin Tingle, for Paul Shivari, I'm Mike Mercado.